Good afternoon, everyone. This is a public meeting of the Due Process Oversight Committee. And I would like to welcome everyone to the live webcast of the meeting. I would like to mention that the webcast will subsequently be available for retrieval from our website as well. The first paper is to report on our technical activities, and I would like to ask Nelly to introduce this paper to us. Nelly.
Thank you, Teresa. So this paper provides an update on technical activities since the last meeting in June, covering July through September. The matters listed in the paper are just for noting. There are no projects that currently require DPOC confirmation that due process has been followed. And I'll just take you through a few highlights in the paper. Starting with paragraph 7, we've had 3 due process documents that have been published in the period. The first is the exposure draft on subsidiaries without public accountability. The second is the request for information on the post-implementation review of the classification and measurement requirements in IFRS 9. And the third is an exposure draft for narrow scope amendments on the initial account or the initial application of IFRS 17 and IFRS 9. With respect to this last project, you may recall we had spoken about that in June, where we had requested a shortened comment period given the urgency of the project and the need to complete the amendments by the end of the year for availability to stakeholders in 2022. The exposure draft comment period closed in July, and the board will be discussing the feedback in October with the plan to finalize the amendments at the end of the year. Overall, the board's work is changing in nature. For the last 18 months to 2 years, it's been quite heavy with due process documents, consultation, and outreach. While we still have some major projects that are underway with an open comment period, we're shifting now towards more redeliberation and greater discussion at the board table of all of the outreach and feedback that we've received over the past couple years for the many projects. Moving on to paragraphs 8 through 21, these paragraphs highlight key due process decisions. The most significant ones to point out are what I had just already mentioned with respect to the post-implementation review of IFRS 9 and the narrow scope amendments related to initial application of IFRS 17 and IFRS 9. And then the last set of paragraphs 23 to 41, highlight some key updates for ISB projects and interpretation committee projects. And the only one that I would just flag for your attention relates to the agenda consultation. We will be coming back to you with further further discussion on the agenda consultation. The comment period ended at the end of September, and the team is currently analyzing all of the feedback to be discussed with the board in November. So we'll share that feedback with you as well, and then we'll come back to you as part of your oversight role to discuss the board's decisions and how that responds to the feedback. Thank you.
Any questions from members? If not, then may I ask Nelly to take us to the 3 reports that the DPOC consider each year around this time.
Thanks, Teresa. So I'll tee up each report and then maybe pause for any questions or comments before moving on to the next report. I'll start with the report on consultative groups, which is agenda paper 1C. And the purpose of this paper is to provide our conclusions and the work that we've done related to whether the consultative groups are continuing to serve the function that they were established for, as well as whether membership should remain the same. And I'll just point out that with respect to membership, we come to the trustees or the DPSC as and when there is a project milestone that would suggest that the membership of the consultative group may need to change. And you can see that in the paper with respect to the rate-regulated activities project and the management commentary project, where given where they are in their life cycle, we will be having conversations about composition shortly. And then with standing groups, there is a formal nomination and appointment process that's discussed with the DPSC and or trustees as and when that timing is appropriate. So the focus of this paper is really on the effectiveness of the consultative groups and whether they're serving the function that they were established for. And the conclusion of the board members and staff is that, yes, the groups are serving the function they were established for. This conclusion is based off of the objective data that's provided in the appendices related to the number of meetings, the attendance, the topics discussed, as well as surveys of the members of the consultative groups, getting their feedback on the quality and relevance of the discussions, as well as a pilot program that Fred Nieto, who is our head of stakeholder engagement, has initiated in May to get formalized structured feedback from board members and staff about the quality of the feedback and the interactions of each of those consultative groups. And that program was initiated as a result of discussions and the direction that you've provided us in previous DPSC meetings. The only other thing that I would mention, just to highlight from the paper, is COVID-19 and sort of the ongoing implications of that. In the past year, as you are well aware, we continue to operate in a virtual environment. Hopefully we're turning the corner and coming out of the pandemic, and hopefully I haven't jinxed that by saying this, but one of the things we're looking at is the learnings from the virtual environment and what that means going forward, the opportunity to have hybrid meetings, the opportunity to have more frequent meetings on an ad hoc basis. So there's further thinking that will be done there and to discuss it at a future date. Thank you.
Thank you, Nelly. Maybe if I could start by asking, in relation to your last point, have we started collating some data as to which medium to effect the consultation, i.e. hybrid or virtual, is more effective? And is there any plan for that to be done?
Yeah, so we have some data right now, and Fred can jump in if he'd like. It's more informal experiences from talking to the staff and board members, as well as the feedback that we've obtained from the survey process to support the paper. So there's that piece of it. And then as we start considering the strategy going forward, we'll have more formal engagements to collect further data.
Thank you. Any members, any questions?
I think Teresa Michelle in the room does.
Yes, thank you, Teresa.
Yes.
Thank you. No, I was just, there's a reference to the Islamic Finance Consultative Group and the fact that, if I remember correctly, it's been quite a while since it's been contributing at least. And is there any reason to, look at why, is there really no issue? Is that just a matter of connectivity with the relevant standard setters? Is there anything we ought to do?
Yeah, so we believe there's quite a bit of value in continuing the consultative group. And in fact, we sort of reinvigorated the conversations with the previous members to see if they continue to be interested in participating. And we're looking towards trying to schedule a meeting later in the year. So especially now with post-implementation reviews of IFRS 9,
there's a lot of value in having those discussions.
So yeah, it's definitely a value and will continue.
Okay. Thank you.
If no more questions, may I ask Nelly to take us through the next paper?
Yes, thank you, Teresa. So the next paper is agenda paper 1D on our annual reporting protocols. And this paper is a little bit of a catch-all of a number of different matters. It's covering, first of all, that all of our comment letters that have been analyzed have been made public. We also confirm that all papers discussed by the board and the interpretations committee have been made public, and that we have been in regular dialogue with securities regulators and prudential supervisors. We also flagged for you the late posting of any papers. We do that at each trustees meeting, but in addition to that, this paper summarizes late papers for the last year. There are three of them, and each of them relate to an merger project that, in order to keep the momentum and the timing going, we made the decision to provide the paper a couple of days later than normal to ensure that we have time for discussion. Happy to take any questions or comments.
Any questions from any members? If not, then could you take us through?
Yes.
We have one, Michelle.
Yeah. Okay, sorry.
No, I'm really sorry. to allow you to put your hand up in a big room, in a physical room.
Yeah, I'll try to be quick and put the hand up on the team call here.
Thank you. It's a question that I don't know if it belongs here, but a number of steps have been taken in response to COVID and, you know, the situation. And is there a plan to sort of review those decisions and reassess whether or not they need to be really sort of paused or be adjusted? And what would be the process to actually look at, you know, these various decisions in terms of deferring, in terms of...
I see what you're saying. You're talking about the time.
Yeah, another thing. Yeah. So when you look at, you know, the impact of COVID, you obviously had a decision made from standards in terms of implementation, in terms of consultation, but also there are some amendments that were introduced in terms of, or clarifications in terms of the implementation of some standards. So at some point, will you sort of look back and say, well, you know, what worked, didn't work, but also what needs to stay in place, what needs to be adjusted, as a sort of focused effort.
Yeah, so I think there's two parts to the question. In terms of the technical work that's been done to support COVID, some of that has sort of a natural sunset clause to it. So, okay. For example, recognition, it will naturally expire at the end of the day from 2022.
Right.
So that's... we don't do formal post-implementation reviews of narrow scope amendments, but it is something that we'll just pick up through our practice and ongoing with that. With respect to the other side, in terms of our processes, the biggest piece is related to our stakeholder engagement, which we will be doing a formal process to think about what the implications are, continuing our learnings from that. And then the other piece relates to the comment period and the fact that during COVID we did extend quite a number of comment periods. There are actually two reasons for that. One was COVID, but the other reason was that there were a number of large projects that were in the consultation phase. And so to give stakeholders enough time to provide thoughtful advice, they requested additional time, which we provided. We are monitoring that on an ongoing basis. And what you'll see now that we're moving from having consultation to re-deliberation, the projects likely won't have that extended time frame. There's one that we did extend. It's related to disclosure initiative, yeah. Pilot project. That one was a special scenario because we're still in COVID. We still have major projects underway. And also because the thinking in that particular project is innovative, and it takes some time for stakeholders to really understand what the board is trying to accomplish with that project, as well as give the team time to perform field testing. So I see that as all short term, and then as on a regular basis, we are monitoring sort of future consultations and trying to bear in mind that due process handbook says 120 days.
Yeah. Because I think one other thing which I think we sort of are doing, but maybe we do it in a little bit more structured way, is sort of reflecting on some of the processes and reactions we had and sort of thinking about whether they were, did we get it right, what did we learn from it. So a couple that come to mind. One is that we put in place some mechanisms inside the building to make sure that we sort of knew where people had challenges and problems and when they might need help. So we had sort of a focused effort on that front, which was quite useful for surfacing issues and led to some educational material. So is that something we should do more routinely, or are there circumstances when that makes sense? also, did we get the balance right in terms of stepping up with some educational materials? Did we do it quickly enough? Some of that, I think, could be just useful as a just reflection for next time disaster strikes, or even whether there's something we learn that's useful in the normal course on the soft disasters.
Thank you.
Thank you. If no further questions, I think that's a good segue for us to look at the next topic, which is review of due process of educational materials. This topic requires a confirmation from the DPOC, and so I would ask Nelly to go through the educational materials which the staff has made an assessment of, and they but will require the DPOC to confirm that the process has been complied with in accordance with the due process handbook. So over to you, Nelly.
Thank you, Teresa. So in the appendix to Agenda Paper 1E, you'll see the educational materials that have been published over the last year. There are four of them. You'll also see the level of review that is mandated by the due process handbook based off of the content in each of those pieces of educational material. We confirm that we've met the minimum requirements, and in fact, for most of these pieces of educational material, the level of board review exceeds the minimum requirements. The first bullet is on the investor update newsletter, which for the most part is just providing an update on the projects that the board is working on, as well as some refreshers on some recently issued amendments. And then the remaining three are educational documents, ongoing concern, climate-related matters, and COVID-19. And in each of those, the board's main focus is to make sure that the materials are technically accurate, but also that the materials do not interpret the standards, but instead are really derived from the standards. So we confirm that we've met the level of review, but happy to take any questions or comments.
Any questions? Joanna.
Really, what you've got there, and in terms of the compliance with the handbook, very comfortable with that in terms of your confirmation to us. But I guess, and it's probably not for the DPOC per se, but more of a strategic question, as I think, as opposed to the DPOC, for the trustees, and maybe some comment from you about the level of educational materials as to whether we are satisfied that we are doing as much as we should be in relation to the education. So potentially a more strategic question in terms of the application of the consistency of the standards.
Yes. So two thoughts on that. The first is maybe just building off the comments that Sue made, that it's sort of an internal discussion on a regular basis of what's the right level of educational material. On the one hand, we could say we want to provide education materials when there's actually a market need and we as a standard setter have a particular role to play, or we could be more prolific at the other end of the spectrum. And so just getting that balance right, as Sue was saying, is something that's constantly on our radar screen. The other piece that I think will be really informative is the agenda consultation. One of the questions that we ask is whether the board has the balance of its strategic activities correct. And as part of that, one of the activities we highlight is consistent application and the educational materials that form part of the consistent application work. And so I think as we go through that feedback, it'll provide us with some more insight about strategically how to get that balance.
And I think that is important, and for the DPOC too, because it is about the process in terms of the engagement overall. So I think that process may be even useful in future, just to talk about that just a little bit in that reporting as to what you are doing and the fact that you're looking at it and how it fits into the agenda, etc. Thank you.
Can I also ask a follow-up question, not so much in relation to the due process aspect of these educational material, but in relation to how helpful these educational material has been. And I want to ask specifically in relation to the item relating to effects of climate-related matters on financial statements. I understand that this was prepared in response to stakeholders' request, and the topic was really to highlight how existing requirements in the IFRS standards already require companies to consider climate-related matters when the effect is material to the financial statements. I think my question, as a follow-up question to what Joanna was asking, is have we received feedback as to how helpful they are? Are there lessons learned? Are there any reflections that you can share with us?
I'm happy to start with that. Certainly, I'll let Pierre-Andrés jump in as well. So the feedback on the climate-related educational material itself has been very positive. People have seen that it's starting to move practice and sort of hone focus in on, in applying IFRS standards, what things do you need to think about specific to climate? So that piece of it has been very helpful. It has also raised some questions about, well, is there something more that may need to be done to IFRS standards? And that question is being picked up through the agenda consultation. In the agenda consultation, we identified a number of commonly flagged projects as potential priorities for the board, and climate-related matters was one of them. And so again, as we go through that feedback, we'll get a better sense of where our stakeholders stand and if there's something further from a standard-setting perspective that needs to be done. And again, thinking through any potential ISSB, whether we need to coordinate on that as well.
I might just add one area that has been flagged to us is a potential difficulty in auditing and enforcing these educational guidances or the thrust behind it. So we have been made aware of difficulties in the audit environment and saying, well, we are cognizant of this educational material, but since it only encourages rather than requires companies to do something, it basically comes back to the question, how do you relate the principle-based requirements that are housed in IAS1 with a specific topical area of climate-related disclosures? And we had a discussion with the firm just recently where we said, you know, it basically comes down to what approach do you take with regard to principles-based versus rules-based? Because if we follow down that path, it may lead to continuous standard setting on our part, which is certainly not the way that we want to venture into, if we can avoid that by putting out educational guidance and demonstrating how you could apply the general principles to a specific subject matter. So this is something that we will certainly consider as we process the agenda consultation further.
So just with one short comment, because our standards do require you to provide all material information that investors need to understand your financials. That's a requirement, that's not just a nudge. But then the challenge for the audit firms is then relating that to the specifics of climate change. And of course, there it would be easier if there was climate words specifically in the standard, but to Andreas's point, we want to add a specific word for every situation, because in an ideal world, it's much better to have that general requirement and to have it applied to particular facts and circumstances. But I think it's going to be very interesting to see in the agenda consultation. And I think in addition to the management commentary discussion we had earlier, it may be a good candidate if the IWSB is established for another situation where the two boards together say, okay, this is the information investors need. You make sure this is in the financial statements. You make sure this is in sustainability disclosures and make sure the package works. So it could again be good timing with the agenda consultation.
Thank you. No, I agree. And particularly in view of the direction of travel that some of the sustainability disclosure standards will be required to be made on a compulsory basis. I think through the national or local mechanism. So I think this is definitely an area that will need more thought. And more connectivity between the two boards after the ISSB is established. So thank you for that, those thoughts. Any other comments on this paper? And I assume we are all happy with the staff assessment of due process in accordance with the handbook, and no objection to me confirming the assessment on for your behalf. So thank you. The DPOC agrees that the education material published in the year to 30th September 2021 has been appropriately reviewed as specified by the relevant provisions of the handbook. Thank you. So I think that concludes the formal papers, and at this juncture, if I may ask Henry to let us know if we have received any correspondence requiring our attention in the usual way.
Thank you, Teresa. No, there is no correspondence to update you on payment 1F.
Thank you. So unless anyone who has either attended this webcast or any of the members have anything to raise, I draw the meeting to a close and formally close the public part of the meeting. Thank you very much for your attendance.